Hello, this is Spencer, and welcome to Let's Talk About Gay Stuff, woo, the podcast where we talk about gay stuff and discuss LGBTQ plus history. You may know me as the guy who keeps the sound in check and gets the Let's Talk About Gay Stuff podcast episodes out each week, but you may also know me from the creepiest and crawliest of podcasts, our spoopy podcast, and the most fabulous and glamorous of podcasts, our Rupee podcast. Both awesome podcasts, part of the ListenWorks network. But they're only slightly about gay stuff, and we're here to talk about only gay stuff, right? Well, the guys are out on a little break. They're out of town, bringing you 114 consecutive weeks of laughs, learning, and love about LGBTQ plus history. But of course, they did not want to leave you empty handed. It's very hard to stop listening to Let's Talk About Gay Stuff because it's just, you know, such a wild ride, and they just give it to you. So they were not going to cut you off cold turkey. Lucky you, we're still going to give you the flavor of the week in LGBTQ plus history while the guys are on a break. They left me here in this room. It's only been a week. There was 4 days worth of food, but I felt like we should probably conserve some of that. So I have 4 Oreos left, and the magazine got boring, so I've started origami. And let me just tell you that you can only fold a sheet of paper 7 times before you can't do anything else. So, of course, nobody's worried about me. We're good. No. Let's look back. We're going back to episode 64, where we talked about Jose Saria. Why this topic, you may ask? Because this week, back on August 19th, 2013, this LGBTQ plus trailblazer passed away. The guys remember this iconic LGBTQ plus activist and drag icon who was referred to as Empress Jose I, the Widow Norton, the first Empress of San Francisco. How did this name come about? Find out when you listen to this flashback episode, and you'll hear about how Saria managed to become the first known LGBTQ plus person to run for office.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Gay Stuff. Woo! Yep. We're the podcast where we talk about gay
stuff.
Sound
like the Halloween edition.
And discuss the week in LGBTQ history. Woo! LGBTQ plus history. We are Thomas,
Tony,
Kendall.
And this week, we're talking about the week of August the 16th through August the 22nd, and we'll discuss Ricky Stryker, Jose Saria, and Staircase the movie. Get excited. Those are going to be fun topics. Mm-hmm. Tony, are you auditioning to do the intro from now on? I mean, by all means. I tried to give you more involvement with the ads, but I mean, you get bonus pay, right? Duck my pay, we'll give you the bonus pay.
Well, speaking of movies, have y'all heard people are coming after Jared Leto for being cast as Andy Warhol in an upcoming movie about him? Wait, people are like, a gay man should be playing Andy Warhol.
Wait, were we talking about movies?
We're not talking about movies, speaking of movies.
I was like, wait a minute. Hard segue. I'm like, didn't we talk
about
it?
He was like excluded from the conversation. So I was like, anyway, talking about movies, what I want
to... Oh, can I talk about my topic now?
Somebody said the word movie.
No, we can check the tape later, but...
Do you want to start doing the intro? He's like, anyways, since we're talking about movies...
So we're talking about moving people's parts. Speaking of movie, hey, let's talk about
the word movie.
All right, well,
okay,
action.
Let's keep it moving.
Hey, correction.
Wait, I just said keep it moving. Speaking of movies, Jared Leto is Andy Warhol, and people are like, well, he's straight, so another straight person cast as a gay person. But should only gay people play gay people in movies?
That's a good question. I mean, we've had this kiki before. I mean, I think gay people should be... I think the challenge for gay actors is they haven't had gay parts to play. So now we have gay parts to play. And I think it's not the same. Yeah, we should have an opportunity to play them. But to your point, I don't think it always has to be gay people playing gay characters.
Well, to me, that's not equality. If the same, you expect gays to only play gays and straights to only play straights. It's acting.
I mean, gays will want to play straight people, too. Now, you know, there's a documentary on Netflix called Disclosure, right? That I don't know if you guys have seen that. Tony, do you have Netflix?
I don't.
No. We're, for our company bonus this year, everyone's getting a Netflix account.
Well, you have mine.
Well, the reason I don't is because I don't watch much TV, and I feel if I did have it, I'd watch more than I do.
You think someone's going to steal your identity? No, they're already doing it, but through this podcast, they're stealing it slowly. No, but the Disclosure is a documentary. You haven't seen it, Kendall?
I don't think so.
It's about trans actors and actresses, people, and talking about, and so it's documentary. Very, very good. You know, after Spence and I watched it, we're like, we need to, and we say this during the podcast when we talk about trans people, like, it's a learning experience for us. We need to be more sensitive. But one of the things they were saying is, like, trans actors and actresses need to play trans characters, because when you have straight characters play or cis characters play trans folks, one, you're doing a disservice for the
trans community.
For the trans community. Part of what they were saying is, like, when you have Jared Leto, for example, which, because he did Dallas Buyers Club, right?
Mm-hmm.
He
played flack for that too.
When he does that, then it's like, then people see him out of that, out of character, as just Jared Leto, and it reinforces that. See, I don't want to, you know, have a relation with the trans woman or have sex with the trans woman, because that's really a dude, right? Whereas you know, trans women are like, I'm a woman, you know, I'm not a man. I'm not going back to being a man in most cases, right? So it's like they're saying when you have these actors play it, it one has that effect where people associate trans women with being real men, and there's like, that's not the case. And two, you're spending, the actor has to play trans versus just be trans, and so you lose, you know, your focus on the transness of it, of the acting, versus it being just the true trans man or woman experience. So I think that's different than, you know, playing gay or lesbian, because I do also feel that, you know, to your point, Kendall, like, gay and lesbian should have the opportunity to play straight characters,
right? It's called acting,
right?
But for trans, I do think trans actresses and actors need to play trans characters. But the true equality would be a trans actor, actress playing a cisgender person.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's acting people.
Right, right. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, I think it's a...
But it's the faux controversy of the day.
We've noted before, this tends to stir up some controversy with folks when we do that.
So, oh, I love it.
You love the controversy. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So, I mean... What were we going to say?
Well, now I have an idea for a spinoff.
We'll go
speaking
for it.
Of movies.
Yeah.
Where I'm just a critic.
You can be a...
Speaking of movies. And no one's speaking of movies at all.
That's the title of it. Speaking of movies.
Even though somebody said movies in the beginning.
That's a good title.
He was just waiting for his cue. And now you took out some of the organic aspect of our Kiki. Like, you were like, okay, is it my turn? Is the cue? Yes, there is. Every once in a while, it may not seem like it, but there is some planning that goes into these podcast episodes.
A little bit.
I swear somebody said movie.
Speaking of movies,
I heard it again.
A recent Gallup poll shows that Americans have reported feeling stress, worry, and anger at the highest levels in over a decade. And while we're growing more and more aware of the effects of stress on our bodies and minds, we may not have considered the effects that our stress can have on our pets. According to a 2019 study, there's a synchronization between stress hormones in humans and their dogs. If you're a dog parent, you probably already know that your pup is very good at reading your body language, and you can quickly pick up on how you're feeling. We're always working to reduce our stress in any way we can, but what about the anxiety we may have passed on to our dogs? Is that what Kennedy's problem is? I made him super anxious, and that's why he comes at me. Baked Bones, luckily, and I can verify this, has a solution. CBD has been shown to help reduce stress and anxiety in both humans and dogs, and Baked Bones has your dog covered. Made from organic, human-grade ingredients and full-spectrum hemp oil, their bones may offer some relief to your anxious pup. Check out BakeBones.com for more information on CBD for dogs and other benefits they may provide. Baked Bones offers free shipping on all orders over $25, and you can save 15% using the promo code GAYSTUFF15. That's GAYSTUFF15. Baked Bones is LGBTQ-owned and operated and is based in H-Town, Houston, Texas. Baked Bones proudly donates 10% of all profits to no-kill shelters in the U.S. Baked Bones, bake dogs happy.
It works.
Tony, come on. Where's the... woof.
A woof.
Yes.
Thank you for reminding me.
The time it's most appropriate. It's like
baked bones. Woof. Yes.
Woof.
Yeah,
God, they, I forgot to rehearse. They
were, dang it. Dang it. You weren't, we got to make your marks more clear, or you can just make them up like Kendall does. So.
I wonder if the cats can eat them.
Did someone say? No, I don't know. I think so.
It's only like 9 ingredients. It's like applesauce, peanut butter.
What? They're on the label. It's not a proprietary secret.
It's on the bag. It says these are like the 9 ingredients, and it's all, yeah.
Speaking of movies.
Speaking of politics. I'm kidding. Well, speaking of politics, no, I have a story.
Now that you heard the word.
Oh, my God. No, I did read something this week where this lady in Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri, she's a racial justice advocate. She was homeless. She upended a senior Democrat that he and his dad had. So I think he's occupied the U.S. House. But he or his dad they've occupied this House seat since the 1960s. And so it was a really close Democratic primary, but she eked out a win, which I thought was pretty cool. So. Changing of the guard. But yeah, she was like homeless. She's like,
yeah, I heard about that. She's started out homeless. She went and got her RN, so she's a nurse, and became an activist because of what she saw in Ferguson and what she saw were a lot of issues. And man, was she the underdog in her primary, and she beat
and it was tight. I think it was like 49-46. Yeah, very established. I mean, and also it's like, if he and his dad had that office for 60 years.
Well, at that point, they think it's their
office,
which they don't have to work as hard if it's bestowed upon you.
And she's
because of your name.
She's LGBTQ? Or she just...
She's not, no.
I was like, oh, well, yeah, but that's
cool.
But
she's a good supporter.
Yeah. Well, no, we need those folks in the office. Yeah. I mean, all those elections matter. I mean, we tend to focus on the top of the ticket with Trump and Biden, but... all the way down to...
But the bottoms need love, too.
Hey, don't they? The hungry bottoms. Woof.
Woof.
speaking of pledge, it's important that, we've been advertising, not advertising, but promoting to take a pledge. I think we've all decided that we're going to do that. I'm looking at everyone nodding their heads that we're going to also commit to registering to vote, which we all are, commit to vote, which on November 3rd, making sure we do that. Also committing to getting other people register to vote. Again, we've talked about the value and the benefit of doing phone banking and all that stuff. But a lot of times you're talking about the strangers who don't want to talk to you, which is, still something, campaigns need done. But sometimes it's just talking to people in your circle and making sure that they're aware. And I think we all have friends and family that may be a bit disengaged and don't vote. And they're like, oh, it's not a big deal. It doesn't affect me. And just talking to those folks and encouraging them to vote, I think is important. So getting them one registered to vote and then encouraging them to go to the polls. I think I mentioned in 2018, I made sure my mom and dad and my sister sent me a selfie of their I voted sticker. So, and they all did, and they were all smiling. But I mean, every day I was like, have you voted yet? Because in Texas, we can early vote starting.
For, yeah, a couple weeks.
Yeah, the governor, he actually extended the early voting time, which is, kudos.
What is it now, 3 weeks or four?
I think it's three. I think it starts in the middle of October. We'll have to get back with dates. But
I'm voting in person with all this vote by mail shenanigans that
me too.
Trump's doing.
Yeah.
And I voted in the runoff less than a month ago. And they strictly enforced the mask. This isn't Houston. Strictly enforced the mask rule. People standing 6 feet apart. They take your temperature with a little forehead thing.
Oh, I didn't get my temperature taken.
Yeah, I did. With a little gun.
They squirt. They squirted. Whatchamacallit my hands.
Oh my gosh!
Oh, they did.
Let me clarify.
I didn't get that treatment.
They did that, but they did give me an alcohol wipe for the machine and
a finger condom.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I do think it would be good for.
I was like, I'm not a lesbian. I don't need a finger gun.
Hello, I do think it would be good for people to explain what those things are because I was a little bit caught off guard. I'm like, what is all this stuff? Like, you were getting a little care package, which you normally don't do, right? You just show them your license, and then they're like, always telling me, is this your actual address? But anyways, because I need to update my license. But anyways, you're going to get this finger condom, your temperature may get checked, you're going to get this wipe.
Anally.
So it's important because you're also taking probably your little cheat sheet card of terms of who you're going to vote for, which is the other part of this pledge, educating yourself on the issues and the candidates. Because, again, Biden-Trump, very important election. It's going to, that has a lot of impact on the national laws that apply to, you know, the LGBT community, minority rights, women's rights, all sorts of things. But it's the local issues at the city council level, the school the board level, the bottom, mm-hmm. that the bottom of the ballot. Okay, it's not the bottom races. Well, maybe some of them are, but hey, teach their own. But we, you know, the world needs tops and bottoms.
But I do feel like some people think when they think, oh, does my vote really matter? They think of like big national elections where it's like, oh, Texas always goes red or whatever. But last election, my city council district, there was an LGBT candidate running, and then the incumbent, her dad has been a politician forever. She's probably in her 50s or 60s. She's been a politician forever, and it's kind of like she has a reputation for not listening to constituents because it's like, eh, you know. And that race was decided by 9 votes.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, every vote does matter. Like, you have a lot more impact on local stuff.
And well, and this election you were just talking about, right? I mean, this one where this, you know, this candidate won, right? It's, you know, beat an incumbent, and it's because people went out
and it was 49-46 right. percent. So, yeah, that she won by. Yeah.
That's what, a couple hundred votes.
Yeah, yeah. So probably, yeah.
Your votes matter. Votes
matter.
It may be a rounding thing in the presidential election, but in, you know, for the city council, for the district judge who decides, you know, basically who goes to jail on for, you know, marijuana possession. Like, those are the things that...
And for LGBT people, local judge races are super important because if you're ever, like, there's an adoption case or, you know, something like that, if they're anti-LGBT...
Yep. So go out and vote. Take the pledge. You can read about it on our social media. We've got some info on it, our website. So it's not a thing that we're asking you to sign up for. It's just, you know, encourage yourself
civic
to,
duty.
Yeah, to yeah. go vote and get others involved.
If anything,
in the
go for the finger condom. Exactly. You know, it's not often you get this.
Yeah, and you get the wipe so you can reuse it. So, yeah. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Economy Works. Need help with marketing? Hire a freelancer. You need help building a website? Hire a freelancer. You need help with benchmarking and analysis? Hire a freelancer. Economy Works believes in the power of connection and wants to connect you with its freelancers and its talent network. The talent network has over 800 years of experience in growing in HR, marketing, IT, accounting, and other specialties. Economy Works. When we work, the economy works. Find out more at economyworks.com. That's economyworks.com. No. Woof.
Woof.
Speaking
God, I
of,
didn't know it was like required.
Like that's the punchline to every ad now.
Woof.
Okay, so I would like to talk about as I was talking about throughout your whole topic, Tony, which I think was really good. I mean, I had never heard of Miss Stryker before, and I love the name. Like that is a that's a true
like Ricky Rikki
Ricky Stryker. But I feel like she was influenced a lot about with the guy that I want to talk about, which is Jose Julio Saria, and they called him Mama Jose. And so Mama Jose died this week. Woof. Yes. Mama Jose died this week on August 19th, 2013. Again, sadly, of cancer, just like Robbie Stryker did. Mama Jose, as we'll refer to my topic, was a World War II vet, human rights activist, entertainer, and empress. In 1961, ran for the board of supervisors. So this, the reason we know of
Ricky Stryker, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, you said Robbie.
No, Rick. Oh, did I? We said Rick. Well, he said Ricky the way he liked it.
Yeah, it's Ricky.
Yeah. That's we just said that.
You said Robbie.
Whatever, Kendall.
Robbie, Ricky,
and someone.
You
said
also just
someone said movie earlier.
Every word we say, okay, you think is movie.
Movie. Yes. Robbie and Ricky. No, Ricky. Ricky Stryker. But we're talking about Mama Jose now. Mama Jose, most notably, among other things, is the first openly gay politician to run for office. In 1961, he ran for the Board of Supervisors. And I will use the word he is a drag queen. I'm referring to, I'll use Mama Jose, but it was a drag queen. It was a gay man. So that's how he identified. And have you guys ever heard of...
I have not.
Jose Sari, maybe because I'm not saying Saria.
Oh, yeah, it's all coming back
to
me now.
In that case. Referred to as the Rosa Parks of the gay rights movement. Any still not ringing a bell? No, I've never heard about that guy. I happened upon him because we did a daily post maybe back in his birthday, which is in December. But yeah, first openly gay person to run for office. So we talked about
anywhere at all in the U.S. I mean,
in the U.S. Yeah, that we know of. From I mean, there's no other person cited, so I guess we're all safe to say that he's the one. He was born in San Francisco in 1922, raised by a single mother. He joined the military during World War II. He actually flirted his way into the military because he was a small guy, under 5 feet, weighed 90 pounds, so soaking wet, 90 pounds. And so he flirted his way to get in there. So he couldn't get in because of a small frame, but eventually got in and was a translator for the military. Notably, in addition to being this political icon for the LGBTQ community, he was a drag queen, hence the Mama Jose. Cool. So a drag queen, so that's what I'm talking about. Him, his drag persona, and a little bit about his civil rights work for the LGBTQ community. I would say we'll probably have to come back to him and talk about his actual running for office, because I think that's an interesting topic in terms of what he did. But I'd like to, he's such an interesting character that I'd like to talk about his drag piece. Because so after the military, he started working at the Black Cat Cafe, which we've talked about, right? That mm-hmm. we talked about the riots there. He actually wanted to be a teacher coming out of the military, but unfortunately he was caught up in an entrapment sting operation by the police. And so he was at a hotel and they caught him, I guess, trying to solicit for sexual relations. Of course, you know, what happened is he got a lawyer. They told him, plead, pay the fine and, you know, just be done with it. Yeah. And so he paid the fine. Ultimately, I guess, pled guilty. And because of that, that's on your record. So
forever,
the fine is an admission of guilt.
Right. So if you're doing that's on your record, basically being a sex offender, you can't really be a teacher. Because as a gay man, it's like, well, we're coming after your children, right? That's the
stereotype.
And at the time, you didn't even have to have that. Like, in the documentary I watched about the lesbians, if the bar was raided and you were taken in, you were fined with, small fine, but then you're deemed immoral or whatever. You have a morals charge against you, right, which eliminates you from a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you do a background check and you can't find it. So especially a teacher, like you said, we talked about Anita Bryant. Well, we're going to come back to her and down the road. But, it's those sorts of things. Like, these people are after your children, right? So I don't know. I mean,
the Save the Children campaign is what mm-hmm. she did.
Yes, but it's that whole gay men are pedophiles, and that's such a disgusting connection.
Sorry to interrupt you again, but one note on that too. One of the stories about like the importance of mods was when bars were raided, almost everybody just said, yeah, take me in, I'll pay the fine, you know, whatever. It was chit-chatting around the lesbian bar that some lesbians are like, no, I fought it. I basically got a lawyer
and a lot of them could.
No contest. And they're like, you can do that.
Yep.
And so that's another thing where it's like you get education through the gay bar, right? It's like some women are like, I didn't know we could do that.
In large part, this man here that we're talking about. So after the military, again, he wanted to be a teacher, realized he couldn't. Like, that was his passion. Like, he wanted to be a teacher because of this stain on his record, he couldn't do it. And so he decided to pursue another dream. Again, he was working at the Black Cat Cafe. During his time there, at one point he filled in for a bartender, and then at another time an entertainer didn't show up, so he got to fill in for one of the entertainers. And so he gained popularity, he had a good voice, people liked him, and so he was doing a riff off the opera Carmen, and so he basically created his own opera, gay opera, of course, because why not? And so he would perform, and then he got a reputation of performing on Sundays, and you know, there's plenty of articles about him being 4 o'clock on Sundays, so a good old Sunday fun day watching Mama Jose do her thing, doing these opera things. She would end the show with God Save Us, Nelly Queens, to the tune of God Save the Queen. And so, very, very, you know, this, he was a very charismatic person. He became a local celeb and basically the face of the community at the time. In 1964, as a drag queen, she kind of really solidified her identity. She was crowned queen of the Tavern Guild Bow at a show hosted by that cavern, so the Tavern Guild, and declared when she won, she was like, you know what, I'm already a queen. So down, you know, afterwards, because people would, when you win one of those pageants in drag culture, you basically carry that title for a year. And so after a couple of weeks, she was like, you know what, I'm not a queen. I'm her royal majesty. I'm her royal majesty, Empress of San Francisco, Jose the First, the Widow Norton. And so people were like, what? And like, who, what is this? And she's like, look, I'm an empress because they're, queens are bitches. And so I'm different. I am the empress. And so where did she get this name? Right. So she decided to claim herself the widow of Joshua Abraham Norton. And I don't know if you guys have ever heard of him, known well in San Francisco. He was an Englishman from the 1800s who wasn't, and he was a businessman, went to San Francisco during the gold rush time. His business flipped, was, you know, went south, was not, you know, basically went out of business. Mm-hmm. But he was an eccentric, and so he became more eccentric, you know, after his business failed. And what he decided to do, he declared himself the Emperor of the United States and of Mexico. He even printed money. There was articles about him in the local paper about him being the emperor. So people were kind of, they were amused by him. I mean, so much to the point that when he died in 1880, about 30,000 people showed up in the streets to you know, honor him.
Yeah.
And so he was a local celebrity himself, but he died in 1880. So here she is in 1964, 1965 saying, I'm his widow. So if you think about it, like this, you know, it's based on this guy from the 1800s who was himself an oddball and made up this thing that he was the Emperor of the United States and protector of Mexico. That's what was his title. And she's like, yeah, I'm his widow. Like, who are you the widow of? And she's like, I'm Widow Norton. And so,
she was a little wacky too.
She was just kind of like,
not wacky is a band.
No.
Over the top.
It was a drag queen. She's like, Widow Norton, because there's this famous crazy guy in San Francisco. And so she wasn't like, it wasn't crazy. She was just like, I'm going to be so extra. Like,
yeah, who else would be the widow? Crazy,
and so she showed up. She said to one time she had a driver take her to the plot of
his Norton. Cemetery.
Yeah, and people were like, who are you? She's like, well, I'm the widow. I'm his widow. And they were like, who are? Why didn't you tell us? No one ever comes and visits the emperor, as they refer to him. And so she basically went above and beyond playing this out. So in 2005, she took. There was an annual festival remembering Emperor Norton. And so she had a ceremony. So this big ceremony, this big to-do at his plot. So there were a marching band, bagpipes, rainbow flags. It was a gay, you know, all the gay community was in on it.
Yeah, 2005.
In 2005. Wow. Took it to his plot. And she was in her widow garb and all black and wearing a veil. And, you know, they played, you know, homage to this emperor, but it wasn't like a cult, like it was just very fun and campy.
Yeah.
So that's what I like. That's why I mean, I didn't get anything researching. Kind
of stuff.
It was playing
in New Orleans and Key West, and
yeah, it was playing up to this character of like, I'm going to be this empress. When she did that, though, she basically became the mother of a house. You know, they didn't call it the house, like in New York City ball culture, they called them house. But she was the mother or the empress of the court of San Francisco and the international, what became the international court system. So it was this West Coast cities, Seattle, Portland, Vancouver, and she was the mother of this house or of this court. So which was kind of cool. Like I mean, she went from this black cat, you know, waitress part time initially when she started, because again she wanted to be a teacher, to becoming this like big, you know, house mother through the drag persona. But you know, he's not called the Rosa Parks of the LGBTQ movement because of his drag persona. It was what the drag persona allowed him to do, because he got a lot of popularity, that he was able to do a lot of things to help the LGBTQ community in the 60s. So he founded the League for Civil Education, which was aimed at educating gay people about homosexuality, and not just gay people, but people in general. And basically he was advocating, like, we don't need to hide from our identity. We don't need to hide from who we are. We need to a quote that he kind of lived out. You don't have to conform. You are who you are, and that's it. He's like, I am what I am, and that's it. So even after he got out of the military, he was always out. He was never in the closet. I guess partly because of his frame and physique. He was, we talked about the femmes. He was presenting. He was very obviously gay, right?
He was like a little Bratz doll.
Yeah, pretty much. And so he founded that organization saying, we need to be out, we need to be visible, and we need to educate people that being gay is not a bad thing. In 1963, League of Civil Education was really forming. It started to focus on a newsletter to get the information out. So he decided, okay, that's on its own. Like, I want to go do something more. There more needs to be done. That's where you get into the Society for Individual Rights. So he was one of the founders of that organization, which was the first nonprofit in California. And it was more assertive. At the time, you had the Daughters of Bilitis representing the lesbian community and the Mattachine Society representing gay men. But as we've talked about before, these organizations were very much like, these are a way for us to get together, discuss ideas, discuss things we want to do for the movement, but we're not rocking the boat, right? Incremental change.
Yeah.
This is where, Grandpa Lopez would probably be. And some of them were,
like the Mattachine and Daughters of Bilitis were, you can't really be out. We're going to kind of work behind the scenes. Like, we don't want to be out there, like you said, rocking the boat or come out. Versus some people are like, we need to be out and proud.
And he was like, we are going to be out and proud. Embrace the identity. Let's organize. Let's have socials. I mean, let's go to the bars, but let's have bridge clubs. Let's have bowling leagues. Maybe that's probably mostly lesbians in the bowling leagues. No, I'm kidding.
Softball.
But also, it was the social element, because to the point of the bars being the place where we would go all the time as a community, and you had, again, as you noted, one ear out, one foot out. Like, this was a place, let's go other places.
Yeah.
And socialize. And it doesn't have to be, because the bar culture, again, it's a sense of community, but there's also a lot of alcohol, potentially drugs, and it's not always the best environment for everybody, right?
Yeah.
And so these dances they had,
the
bowling leagues.
We'll describe it like that.
But also, they did more than socialize. They had a kind of an education aspect about them, so which to me is very intriguing. I like the, let's be loud, let's be visible, but again, it goes back to, what's the purpose? What are we trying to do? Yes, it's great Black Lives Matter, yes, that's great Me Too, but who are we electing? Who are you electing to, to Congress, to your state house in 2020, to make sure that all that noise you're making is and rightful, and I don't mean noise in a derogatory term, all that action and energy you're creating is going to have some positive effect, lasting effect on the downturn. So what he did was organize voter registrations, drives, and also they created this pocket lawyer guide. So if you were arrested or harassed by the police, it kind of gave you a go-by in terms of what to do, what to say, how to act, who to call, so that you could kind of minimize the... talking about in terms of people going to the bars and getting raided, and them standing up and saying, hey, I'm not going to do this anymore. That was one of his things that he was advocating for. He's like, no, we're going to stop just pleading guilty or paying the fine. He's like, we're going to say no. What happened is, when they did that, there was such a backlog, and because police would just throw you, they'd catch you and put you in jail, right? What happened is, when they all started resisting and saying, not guilty, pleading not guilty,
the
backlog in the courts. So then the court said, okay, police officers, you can't just bring people in. You need to have some proof that they're violating this. So huge, minor thing, but a huge thing, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, police, obviously, we have Stone, because this happened in the early, middle 60s. So it was still happening. Granted, it was in San Francisco. But it was, so police raids didn't stop. Stonewall was a police raid, right? So, but it did make them pause a little bit, saying, okay, we need to make sure we're doing a bit more work than just, going in and just pulling the paddy wagon, right?
Because one of the examples with mods was, all these gay bars, they'd have a siren and a red light. So if that siren was going off, if you were dancing, like two women were dancing, you stopped. And so that's why some of the gay bars wanted, because some gay bars can be very discriminatory, like, we're only men, we're only women.
Yeah.
But they wanted a few of the opposite sex, so that if the police come, you can pivot from a woman to a man and dance with them, or you just stand there. But if the siren went off and it's okay, there's 50 lesbians standing on the dance floor, originally the cop could just be like, everybody in here is immoral, you're going in. But then it's if you have to have proof, were they dancing? No.
Right.
And they would take you, a lot of times, they'd take you to the bathroom and make sure you're wearing the underwear that matched your gender.
Well, so...
Yeah. Or they would just, they wouldn't even haul you in. They would want you to bribe them right there.
Well, to that point, right? So on Halloween, they were notorious. The police were notorious for raiding the gay bars because a lot of people were dressed in drag, right? And they would arrest you on this. So you need more proof, but they would arrest you. And easy to prove someone's breaking the law when the law is you're misrepresenting your identity, right? So heaven forbid you dress in attire that's different than your gender, that you know, your birth gender, and so you could get arrested for that, and so for presenting, you know, falsely. And so what he did, he organized a way, he made these cards so that you could carry with you on Halloween night, so that said I'm a boy. So they were these black cats, and they said on them, I'm a boy. So when police officers said, hey, you're trying to present like at, you know, you're dressed in drag, you're a man dressed as a woman, and you're trying to pass as a woman, you could flash these cards and saying I'm a boy, which then says I'm not trying to present, I'm telling you I'm a boy. So this is not me trying to you know, hoodwink you. So again, it's just these small things, these small tactics that just had to make the police work harder to illegally. I mean, because we've spent plenty of time talking about our debates on police, but this was a way for police officers to have to pause before they aggressively, you know, tried to bring people in. And basically police officers were violating, in my opinion, their oath, right? Their position, you know, they're supposed to serve and protect, and they were just being disruptors in what was ordinarily a peaceful community. Other than there were some people who were like, oh, this is immoral to be gay, right? And which is dumb, but those were the laws on the books. So pretty significant, I think, from the LGBTQ community standpoint in terms of what he did and some of the tactics he put in place. He ran for office, like I mentioned, and we'll come back to this in a later episode, but he ran for office in 1961 out of frustration of what was going on with the police harassment and the raids. He ran for the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, which, you know, in 1977, Harvey Milk would be elected to. And so he kind of set the groundwork for Harvey Milk to do that. He lost ultimately, but what he achieved during that time is he got a number of votes. We got people to help, you know, to get him on the ballot, and then he got people to vote for him. And what that called attention to the politics of that time in San Francisco was like, you can't overlook the gay community. Like, if you're going to run for office, this is a constituency that you need to come talk to. And so again, another remarkable achievement for a guy that unfortunately we've done little about. So other works beyond kind of these big things, because then there tends to be a gap in terms of what he did. But he showed up back in the 90s. He was in Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything.
He was.
Julie Newmar. He was in the early opening scene. He was he was a drag queen. He was a judge for the drag queen of the contest.
Okay.
Of the year contest. Awesome. Yeah. He was in the video clip I saw on YouTube. He was doing bus tours and drag, talking about what he was doing. So he was kind of doing tours of the city and just describing some of the things that he had done. As part of the, you know, the San Francisco's history. In 2009, the California State Assembly recognized him for his lifetime of achievement. He died again in this week at the age of 90 of cancer in New Mexico. But he was ultimately buried in San Francisco to this full-on like ceremony. So the Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, like, which is one of the prominent churches in the city, is where his memorial service and funeral services were held. You had a bunch of local politicians, LGBTQ community leaders that were there, drag queens. You know, you had the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, who we've talked about. They were there, you know, dressed in their attire. Police escorts, you know, were part of this funeral procession for this.
Empress.
Yeah, she was an empress. And so to cap the empress piece, she was buried at the foot of the Emperor Norton's grave.
She was? Yep. Wow, that's crazy. Oh, that's
on her tombstone, it says, "United we stand, divided they catch us one by one." So still being like cheeky to the end, right? She's buried at the foot of
this is 2013.
Some things, you know, again, her story comes up, his story comes up regularly. His memory kind of lives on with the Jose Seria Foundation. They're basically charged with preserving the memory of Jose, and kind of again, given all the historical things he's done, making sure that story doesn't get lost. In San Francisco, a Harvey Milk Memorial Branch, which is part of the public library system in San Francisco, is on the address is 1 Jose Seria Court. So they renamed the street in front of the Harvey Milk Library for Jose Saria. They talked about him on Pride Month last year on The View. So The View, the TV show, was doing some like random, not random, but clips every regularly during Pride Month about LGBTQ icons and pioneers. And so
that's awesome.
So they mentioned him. So I mentioned that from a mainstream standpoint, like people are starting to rediscover him, Marsha P. Johnson, all these folks that, you know, were like, who are these people now? We're starting to like, and then there's a movie in the works, a documentary called Nelly Queen. They're still seeking funding. It was supposed to be released this year, but I think some of, I don't know, I don't want to say COVID, but it seems to not have made the release yet, but they're still, if you look at the website, they're still looking for to get that out. So, but it's called Nelly Queen. It's about his life. So, which I think is a fascinating life. He seems like an intriguing character. And so, yeah, I think someone we just lost to history that we're trying, we need to slowly bring back.
Well, he was born in 1922, which is the year Betty White was born, who's still walking this earth and will outlive us all. But it just goes to show, in 1961, nobody in the U.S. had openly run for president, and there were people who had been alive a long time at that point who had never seen that. It just shows how quickly gay rights, gay history accelerated in the last century to now.
Yeah. And I do feel that, like, you know, there are ups and downs, but I remember when I first started getting involved with gay politics in the mid 2005, 6, 7, I thought it was going to be a long time before we got gay marriage. And I remember when we got it, I just thought, wow, we have it. It just seemed like it accelerated. It was like such a slog of getting social acceptance and public acceptance. People like, well, you have civil unions. And it's almost like within a couple of years, it's like, there it is.
I think it's an age thing, though, because Spencer and I were having this conversation. I was like, well, what did a 17-year-old, 16-year-old Spencer see? Like, when did, because we were talking about someone getting married at age like 22, 23. I'm like, I couldn't have ever imagined that. But at where I was going to school, like, that was part of the process, right? You get married, maybe your senior year, you propose, or get married because you've been a good Christian virgin your whole life, right? And then you get married right after graduation, buy a house, have a kid, and by 23, 24, you have two
live
kids.
In the suburbs.
Yeah. So I'm like, I couldn't imagine. I can barely imagine that now, right? Barely getting my head at 40 around that. But Spence, you know, he was like, oh, yeah, I just assumed. I was like, but gay marriage wasn't legal when you were, you know, in high school. And he was like, well, just assumed it was going to happen. But I mean, I knew it was going to happen eventually, but I didn't think it was going to happen.
And I do remember, so, you know, Out and Equal, they're the group that fights for, like, workplace equality. So they get companies to try to, you know, incorporate more LGBT-friendly policies. So there was kind of a round table with four or five people. This was probably, like, 2006, 7, 8 or whatever. And they were talking about, like, how fast progress is going to be made, whatever. And this one lady, she was a consultant. She was on a couple of Obama's transgender, you know, boards or groups or whatever. And she said, I'm going to tell you right now. She worked for a tech company in Austin, I think. And she said, I go to, like, Oklahoma, and I see two men or two women walking around campus holding hands. And she said, in places like that, where she said, I think it's going to be a lot faster than we think. And I think there's, you know, like, we make progress, then we recede, whatever. But she said, you know, it's not as far off as you think sometimes.
I do feel like, I mean, to the credit of the millennials and the Gen Z folks, all these things that we've just accepted, and, you know, we've got this very much, you know, Mattachine society, daughters of a lot, like, it takes time and it's a process. They're like, screw that. Like, why, you know, I can, you know, go fight.
That's because of the work people did before.
But I'm just saying, it's the same thing with, you know, why Jose Saria can come in there. It's because you have the Mattachine society that says we can organize. It teaches you that you can organize. It's the same thing like Ricky Stryker. It teaches people that they can organize. Ricky Stryker was inspired by that woman who said, hey, I can be married to a woman, but I may not talk about it. So it takes.
And I would say, for me, I didn't think I would ever in my lifetime see a serious gay contender for U.S. president. I just thought that's a bridge too far. I don't know that we're ready.
And then we had Lindsey Graham.
Exactly.
He won the Iowa caucus.
But then, like, with Pete Buttigieg, where it's like amazing progress. He wasn't laughed off the stage, which I thought he would. And, you know, it's just, and I mean, he was really in the top three
and
or
you know
four
who
candidates.
His constituency really was more conservative, older.
Yeah, because he was moderate instead
voters
of liberal. Yeah.
That liked both what he was saying, and they were like, oh, he seems like a nice young man.
See,
like, what world do we live in?
Talk about him again, but I don't say he was moderate. I just think he was practical. I mean, and maybe...
No, but he wasn't like a Bernie Sanders. Like,
he was definitely moderate.
But he wrote about... I think his ideas were like, yes, let's do... It's the same thing with Kamala Harris. We're like, we want to get there. We just realized we can't just... AOC and Donald Trump, both of them. They have the privilege, although Donald Trump's not in there anymore, and AOC, she's realizing
it. But they don't necessarily want to get there. Biden didn't. Biden was dragged, because you have to drag.
Some of you, I don't think Pete Buttigieg was like, you got to drag me there. I think Biden's one of those people that you want on your side because you can have a conversation with him and he'll hear you out. That's why I don't mind voting for Biden, because I think he's more on my side. Trump doesn't care what I think.
We
talked about George W. Bush. He didn't care what I think.
Right.
The two senators that represent Texas don't care what I think. Joe Biden, again, he's a politician, so maybe he doesn't, but I feel like you could have a conversation with him and he will evolve on gay marriage, on policing, right? And African American the community, right? So I think he's more, this is how I decide in terms of why I vote for him versus, of course, I'll never vote for Trump. But
well, my thing about Biden, and I don't want to get into this, like too deep into this, because we've had these discussions before. Biden is caught in so many lies, and they're not accidental lies. He's a habitual liar. Where he had to drop out of the 1988 presidential race because he kept getting busted for, what is the word when you steal somebody's other words?
Oh, plagiarism.
Yes, plagiarism. What Melania did to Michelle. And he said he was at the top of his class in law school. He graduated almost at the bottom. And there are just so many instances. Oh, he said he was arrested in South Africa for protesting apartheid. No, he wasn't. And he's caught and he, you know, has to walk it back. But I think he's very political. So it versus you have Bernie Sanders, who's been having the exact same message since the 60s. He's a politician, and you can look at it two ways. You can say, and this is what a lot of Republicans are saying, you can say he just wants to be president, so he's going to do whatever AOC or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez or whatever wherever the Democratic Party is going, he's going to follow, versus a leader like a Bernie Sanders who's going to take a Democratic Party and articulate a vision and say this is why we need to do it, and then people follow him. He is going to be, to me, a forgettable president. And I think his legacy will probably be that he nominates a black woman to the Supreme Court and has the first female vice president.
Like, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not going to do any... I feel like he'll do less harm than the current president.
So. Oh, God. Oh, my God, yes. Oh,
that is not...
I mean, the current president is spewing QAnon, nonsense, right? That's part of his
don't platform, say that word. So. You'll summon those idiots.
Right. Well, they've already sprinkled some comments on our
There's social. A lot of insanity with this QAnon crap.
Is there? Just kidding.
No.
Anyway.
Be careful.
Speaking of movies.
Because if we say the word QAnon one more time,
every time you say,
they'll be at our door when I get home.
For what it's worth, every time it's said, like we have this, we've had this conversation pre-recording twice. There has been a comment.
Our accounts blow up.
There's been a comment on our social media related to some of that QAnon nonsense. So it's so crazy.
Insane.
Wow. I love that topic. And not just because I'm obsessed with drag queens and have an entire podcast based upon televised drag competitions called Our Rupee Podcast. Our Rupee Podcast is nose deep in Drag Race All-Star Season 6, and we've got our eyes on the winner. Check us out at ourrupeepodcast.com and Our Rupee Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, or you can send us an email at ourrupeepodcast@gmail.com. Wait, was I supposed to include a commercial? Guess no one's around to hear it, so I can do what I want. Did I mention that the Oreos are Chromatica Oreos and they've got me a little wired? Yes, I ate them during the podcast. Tune in next week to see if I make it through. With that, we're here, we're queer, get used to it!